could have done I'm a Believer or Daydream Believer. We could have played I'm Not Your Stepping Stone, A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You. I really liked Pleasant Valley Sunday. Excuse me. I'm a Believer, Valerie. And the list goes on of Monkees tunes, which we were discovering episode by episode starting September 12th, 1966. So a bit of an anniversary is right around the corner. And our guest has written a little bit about that. Let's say hello to Scott Shea, a music historian and the author of the best-selling book, All the Leaves Are Brown, How the Mamas and Papas Came Together and Broke Apart. He's also got a piece online about why the Monkees should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Hey, Scott, nice to meet you. How are you today?
Hey, John, nice to meet you, too. Thanks for having me on. I am great.
So you're probably too young to have appreciated the Monkees the way I did. I discovered them right in that sweet spot of forming my musical interests, you know, like early grade school.
Well, I was the same age as you, but I was Mark II of that. I was part of when the MTV started replaying their episodes in the mid-80s. That's when I caught the Monkee fever.
Did it work? And did it work for you? I wonder the way it did for me and my generation. That is, this is fun, it's irreverent, and there's music. And by the way, music videos woven in 1966. I thought it was just a terrific show.
Yeah, it was, and I love that music, that era of music. It never seemed old to me. It still doesn't. You know, it still seems as relevant to me today as it probably was back when it was first released. So yeah, I was like a sponge soaking all those sounds up. You know, and I didn't, you know, being a little bit removed from the zeitgeist of that era, I didn't see them as a conflict of interest for groups like the Beatles or something else. I just saw it all as great music.
But they weren't writing the music, right? Neil Diamond and that ilk were, correct?
Well, it was a mix. It's a little bit of a misnomer because, you know, some of them weren't. Like Mickey Dolenz and Davy Jones sure weren't. But Michael Nesmith was writing from the word go. You know, he'd already written some songs, Different Drum and Mary Mary, and they had been recorded by various other bands. And Linda Ronstadt would record Different Drum a year after the Monkees debuted. But, you know, he was a prolific songwriter. And, I think he saw the Monkees as a music first vehicle and a television show second thing.
Oh, that's funny because I think you're right. The rap on them was they were a TV show and it was manufactured that way. For instance, did they not originally not play the musical instruments?
Well, Mike and Peter, they participated in a lot of the sessions from the beginning. Davey and Mickey would come along. They would do their vocals, but they didn't play any instruments or contribute, at least in the beginning. It came a little bit later, maybe a year or so later, and then Mickey was taught how to play drums and, you know, Davey played the tambourine. but Peter and Mike were musician first Monkees, and they were all in on the music side.
Well, the fans were there for them. I mean, whatever the origin stories, right? They were filling arenas as well, correct?
Yeah, they were putting butts in seats, and people were kids were going to the record store and shelling out money, whether it was theirs or their parents. And you know, they had some pretty incredible sales, and it's no small wonder, you know, when you have a syndicated television show. It becomes a cash cow for all the people involved, from, you know, the music supervisor Don Kirshner and his musical publishing group that provided a lot of the, as you said, the songs written by others, and to the record label and the distributors.
Well, I had maybe my sister did, but I know in our house there was a Monkees lunchbox. And we had a Monkees record carrier. I'm trying to think of some of the merchandise that was out there. Imagine if they were hitting the scene today. Although, I don't know, maybe they were fortunate to have sort of evolved in that era rather than this one. I wonder how we would receive, or is there an equivalent of a band like the Monkees now?
I mean, the Spice Girls were probably the most recent equivalent. You know, things are so spread out today. There's so many different options. There's, you know, it's not like it was back then where you had three channels and your local, you know, big radio station, which may or may not be close to you. You know, if you're living in, Milwaukee, you might be getting WLS or, you know, someplace out of Chicago, but you don't really have a huge station. So it was very streamlined. The cream certainly rose to the top in a much harder way back then. Now it's just like kind of anybody can put it out. I don't know that they're really, you know, I guess maybe the equivalent would be like a manufactured reality TV show like Big Brother or something, you know, where you're cheering for people and you don't even know why.
Yeah, right. Or I was just thinking about some of the boy bands, right? The Backstreet Boys, or I don't know. I
yeah, crank but now to think about it, that's like 20 years ago now.
that isn't of late now that you mention it. Talks about the people that auditioned for the show and didn't make the cut. I talk about a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the audition reels themselves. Have you seen the reels like of these guys trying out for the show?
Oh, yeah, they're available on YouTube. You can go go right up and watch them, and they're in black and white. And, you know, so they're very charming.
You wrote the final audition reels, and hindsight reveal how ultimately it must have been an easy decision to pick out the final four. Why do you say that?
Just because they're explosive personalities. I mean, the wackiness and, you know, just lovableness, if that's a word. I think I might have just made that up. But, just comes across, you know, especially, you know, Mike, they're very zany. It's real comedy of the age, which I think has kind of held up. And it's if you're a fan of that era and the way people talk and spoke and philosophize back in those days, you'll really enjoy it. It really kind of jump off the page.
You also wrote, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that future stars who auditioned for the Monkees but did not make the cut, like who?
Well, there's a guy named Stephen Stills you might have heard of. He was in a group called Buffalo Springfield and Crosby, Stills, Nash, and sometimes Young. Brian McLean of the group Love. That wasn't a group that had a lot of hits, but they're a Los Angeles band that have a big following today. Danny Hutton from a group you might have heard called Three Dog Night. And Van Dyke Parks, he was a singer and a songwriter, co-wrote the Smile album with Brian Wilson that was supposed to be their follow-up to Pet Sounds, but was shelved.
That's pretty funny. That only vaguely rings a bell. I think I knew the Stephen Stills part, but the rest of it is surprising to me. And then you also said that Love and Spoonful and the Dave Clark Five were offered the series but turned it down. And go ahead.
Well, that came out many years later. You know, that was a fact that I found on both of them, and they both groups admitted that they had been indeed offered. And the series, and if you watch some of those early episodes, it almost seems like the way they even dressed was very similar to the Love and Spoonful in their look. You know, with the striped shirts and
right,
the tattered jeans.
And contrary to myth, Charles Manson did not audition. 500 young men showed up, and they whittled it down to the four. Manson was not one of them, huh?
No, he wasn't. I don't even know if he was out of prison when those auditions were being held.
What's the knock against them? I mean, maybe not to belabor the obvious, but why haven't they been put in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
It's the whole manufacturer thing that they were put together by a studio. And, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is something that was started by John Wenner and the people over at Rolling Stone. And, you know, the mindset is a very post Monterey Pop Festival, authentic, you know, coming together. And that's not the way they did it. And my argument against that is it really doesn't matter how you come together. It's what you did with your shot when you got it. And the Monkees certainly did that. I mean, I think had Mike Nesmith not joined the group, it might have been a different story because he was really kind of the leader and being musically very good to great. And, I think the Monkees, like I said before, it was the television part was an afterthought. He wanted to make music, and he made very, very good music. And I don't know. The fact that we're still talking about them 58 years after their television debut, and their records are still being played on the radio and in television and movies, to me, that's an incredible testament to their longevity.
I wonder if the fact that they weren't the Beatles, if you juxtapose them with the Beatles, everything pales in comparison. I wonder if that hurts them that way.
Yeah, and they were kind of cast as the answer to the Beatles or the challengers to the Beatles. And I don't think any of them ever really thought, I'm pretty guarantee you they never thought that. You know?
I got news for them. You're not the Beatles. 612 says the Monkees absolutely deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, John. 630 says, I'm younger, but I loved watching the Monkees reruns on MTV. 312, I love the Monkees TV show, but I recently watched an episode in a hotel, and wow, was it out there.
Yeah, it was. It was silly and stupid, but, you know, it was meant to be. It was almost kind of like watching an edition of Mad Magazine I wrote in my article, and it really was. It was zany, wacky. It didn't make sense. There was a lot of non sequiturs, and you know. But it was so '60s. You know, you watch Laugh-In. It's the same thing. You don't think, oh, I'm here for high art. You know, it was just to make you laugh. And I still find myself chuckling whenever I catch an old episode or a clip online.
I always enjoy the music. Now I got to go back and watch some of those shows. Scott Shea, a music historian, he wrote the best-selling book, All the Leaves Are Brown, How the Mamas and Papas Came Together and Broke Apart. Scott, we'll call you again. It's nice to talk to you today. Thanks for the memories.
Thanks for the invitation.